Okay, again, in dealing with the Bible, we run into, again, one of these highly culturally conditioned effects of the gospel. And it's a shame that Bruce Lawrence, the young man who was playing guitar for us and is giving a paper today at some university in Michigan, so he could not be here. But Bruce is a linguistic anthropologist. Try saying that very quickly. In any case, he knows, he's working on his doctorate in linguistic anthropology, and he knows an awful lot about language. And he would hear this in a very different way than I hear it, at least, this passage from Genesis about the name of God. So it's typically, it's a weird form of a Hebrew verb to be, Yahweh. And nobody knows what it really means. I can reel off at least a half dozen possible meanings that has been given by scholars. I am who I am. I am he who calls into being. I am he, but I will be there when I will be there, etc., 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 etc. The upshot, of course, is buried in a cultural fact of the ancient world whereby the name of something was identical with the reality itself. If any of you know that old fairy tale about Rumpelstiltskin, I hope somebody still remembers that. The point being that if this guy found out who Rumpelstiltskin was, then he could own him, he could control him, because the name and the reality were one and the same. Fortunately for this young lady, they did find out his name, and so he flew off in a fury. The same thing is true when this stuff was written. The book of Genesis, which probably goes back to 600 BC or better. If you knew God's name, of course, then you could control God. Which is exactly what the Jewish God would not allow. The other gods all work the same way. If you knew their name, then you were in like Flynn, and you could manage, you can control them. Not the Jewish God. This evasive, mysterious reality that was nameless, that was beyond all names. So I am who I am, which is a regular translation in a lot of Bibles, is an approximation. But what does it mean? You cannot know who I am. And therefore I am not manageable. As any other reality that you can name is manageable. So God remains shrouded in mystery, the God of the Jews. And there's another aspect of this same linguistic phenomenon, which I just forgot at this moment, but it will come back to me, I hope. But you see what they're getting at. You cannot control God. God is unexpectable, unanticipatable. That's why when you read this stuff about this poor old fig tree, oh yeah, well Jesus is going to show up and the fig tree is going to blossom like mad and make everybody happy. Didn't happen. It did not happen. Jesus does all kinds of unpredictable things, just like God does. We cannot control God. We cannot know the ways of God. As so many of us like to believe we can. You know, a little kid dies. God needed an angel in her choir. That's infantile. You know, that's truly child. I don't know why little kids die. They're dying all the time. They're dying in the Mediterranean Sea, probably at this very moment. Doesn't work that way. God does not operate in that fashion. Not the God of the Jews. Now I remember what the other thing is. All language is relational. You say something about this, then you say something about this. The most obvious example, you say father. Well, you can't have father without having a son, or mother without having a son. And so, just as God is unknowable, ultimately unknowable, I don't know if Paul had this in mind when he talked about we do not know how to pray, but the Spirit, in that wonderful phrase, with unutterable groanings, intercedes on our behalf, quite apart from our understanding of how this is going on. Again, this is echoed in that glorious prayer of Merton, Lord, which begins, Lord, I do not know where I am going. And he says at another point, I do not even know who I am. Because if God is hidden, then who we are is also hidden in God. This makes an enormous difference, I think, in our self-understanding, in our understanding of the world, and above all, in our understanding of God. We do not know. We live in a state, as one of the great English mystics put it, in a cloud of unknowing. And this is not unique to some 13th century English mystic. It is true of all the great saints. We don't know. We do not know. We do not know. And we like to think we know because we live in the technological age where we can plug in our computers or GPSs or whatever. And now we know everything. Everything becomes clear. Well, that's misleading. We are not in control of the world. We scratch the surface with... They found black holes. Hooray for Albert Einstein. But how much of reality, whether we're talking about black holes or our own identity, do we honestly not know? We're like the proverbial iceberg, which you see the tip of, but you don't know the general shape of. What is the cash value, as the great William James would say, of this insight? It bespeaks a more profound humility than most of us have, than all of us have, about who we are and our place in the world. We do not know. We do not know. And in fact, that we can make some small inroads into who we are and what we can do. Well, to recognize them as small inroads is a great advance, because in the big scale of things, we still do not know. Lord, I do not know where I am going. I do not even know who I am. But I wish to please you, and I hope that this desire to please you does in fact please you, to go on with Merton's prayer. But this is profoundly important, not just in our ignorance about God, the cloud of unknowing, de docta ignorantia. This is a great theme among the saints, learned ignorance. But it should make us very hesitant as we make our way through lives, trying to bring reality to heal. That's what we think we can do, because we can make computers. There are more things under heaven than all of our wisdom knows, as the bard put it. So it makes all kinds of living tentative. I am not so certain. I am not so certain. A friend of mine came to me during the week and wanted to become a Jew and leave the Roman Church. This guy is very bright, several advanced degrees. And the reason he wanted to do this was that he thinks the church knows too much. We have dogma. We have a 2,000-year history of dogma. This is it. This is it. This is it. But as Francis, bless him, reminds us, these are meager steps on the way to knowing anything. Dogma is not the answer. You're not Catholic because you believe in the Immaculate Conception or the Virgin Birth or the whole panoply of other dogmas. You're Catholic because you seek God in ignorance. And that's why this guy wants to be a Jew, because the Jews are very aware of the unknownness of God. There's a wonderful metaphor that the Jews use. It's called God wrestling. In fact, there are two books by a Jewish scholar. God Wrestling 1 and God Wrestling 2, if you're interested in looking it up. Google it. And where did that come from? Another story from Genesis is Jacob in the night wrestling with an angel. And he gets his hip knocked out of joint, as the story goes. But that's one of the great Jewish metaphors of God, of the quest for God. The quest for God. God is always larger than our doctrine, than our dogmas. Essentially, if God could be contained in a formula of some sort or other, then we would go back to the Rumpelstiltskin phenomenon. Then we would know, then we could control. We cannot, and we delude ourselves to the extent that we believe that knowing all, Pache Papa Ratzinger, if you know all this stuff, if you can give all the right answers to this stuff, then you're safe. I just ran again this week into his infamous statement about wanting a smaller, purer church. We've all grown up with that thing. We little Catholic kids hated all the little Protestant kids who mutually hated us, too. Going home from school was always a trial, as they threw rocks at us and we threw rocks at them. Because we knew and they did not. It's bogus. It's not true. So what are we left with? We're left with that same wonderful thing that Paul said. We do not know what to pray for, but the Spirit within us, with unutterable groanings, intercedes on our behalf. That's the theme taken up by Merton in his prayer. So this shapes all kinds of things, not just our notion of ourselves. We don't know who we are of God. We don't know who God is. And therefore, of what behavior follows from all this ignorance. The fig tree didn't bear fruit. The Galileans, upon whom the tower at Siloam fell, died. Well, God was God and all powerful and protected them. Why didn't God kill all these guys? God didn't. God didn't kill 6 million Jews and 10 million other people. We don't know. So unless we get accustomed to living with that divine uncertainty, we're whistling past the graveyard. You know? And it is tough. It is difficult. But it's the only truth. So we look at all the dogmatic definitions as tiny baby steps. Going where? Into infinity. We do not know. I have 5 graduate degrees. Well, that really makes you somebody, Trojan. No, it doesn't do a bloody thing. The upshot of having 5 graduate degrees ought to convince me of my own ignorance. We don't live that way. And we have a magnificent counterexample of what I've been talking about in Donald Trump. All you had to do was look at Donald Trump's face as he speaks and demeans everybody else into the synagogue. You're stupid, you're ignorant, you're fired, you're worthless. No. That's the great pathology of that man. And so if we ever try to get too uppity, as our black friends would put it, think of Donald Trump and the disastrous impact he would have. Because I think it would be that. And ask God to become more sensitive to our own limited knowledge. It's real knowledge, but it's limited. And we, of course, are very anxious to extrapolate. No, if we know this much, we must know everything. No! No, 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 no. To live in that hiddenness, to be content to live in that hiddenness, to be conscious of that hiddenness, full of God and of ourselves, is what it means to believe in God.